Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now from Israel is Gideon Levy, who is an Israeli journalist and columnist for Haaretz and a member of the newspaper's editorial board. He is the former spokesperson for Shimon Peres, and Gideon Levy writes the weekly Twilight Zone feature, which covers the Israeli occupation in the West Bank and Gaza over the last 25 years. His latest book is The Punishment of Gaza. Welcome to Background Briefing, Gideon Levy.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
And your article recently has gotten international attention, and I imagine at home it's created quite a stir. The Israeli Patriots' Final Refuge Boycott. You're suggesting here that change won't come from within in Israel, and therefore it has to come from the outside. And as long as Israelis don't pay a price for the occupation, or at least don't make the connection between cause and effect, they have no incentive to bring it to an end. So what's your reaction to Secretary of State Kerry's efforts now, indicating that there may be, well, there are going to be talks between the Israelis and the Palestinians? Is that anything that gives you hope?
It gives me some small hope, but it's just the beginning. I can just tell you that even this step was influenced one way or the other, slightly so, by the decision of the European community to not really boycott, but to declare that all the products from the West Bank, from the settlement, will not be sold in Europe. Even this very, very administrative small step, I think, had some influence in pushing Netanyahu into the negotiation table. So things are connected.
So how much are the Israeli political elite? They must be conscious of the fact that Israel used to have enormous support in Europe. France and other countries were very close allies early in Israel's beginning through the 1960s. And then in the 1970s with the occupation, essentially Israel has lost Europe. And I imagine Israel is concerned that eventually it may lose American affection. So how much is there a realization in Israel that their isolation is growing?
Let's put some order and proportion. First of all, Israel did not lose Europe yet. The governments in Europe are very supportive to Israel, even after the last step they took last week. Israel still gains a lot of support, also in certain public opinions in Europe. Also, Islamophobia, which is becoming stronger and stronger in Europe, is playing in many ways into Israeli hands. So I wouldn't like to describe it as worse as it is. Yes, there are certain circles in the European public opinion who lost their patience toward the Israeli occupation, toward the Israeli violation of human rights and international law. But the governments are still way behind. Now, if there is a shift, and I hope there is a shift, then it might also get to the United States. But the United States seems to be still very, very far from the position of putting pressure on Israel. But one thing must be very clear. The key also in those negotiations that might start in the coming weeks, the key is in Washington, not in Ramallah and not in Tel Aviv. If there will be a devoted American president who wants to get to a solution, who wants to put an end to the Israeli occupation, he will find it very easy to do so by pushing Israel.
Well, so far, his Secretary of State, John Kerry, seems to be pushing hard. He does have a tendency to be sometimes preemptively optimistic. But you're suggesting earlier it's what the EU has been saying about the West Bank and a kind of precursor to a boycott that's prompted Netanyahu to take these steps towards some kind of discussions that's going on that may hopefully last longer than the last ones that lasted for 3 days. My understanding is that, well, let me ask you this. Do you think that Netanyahu, we know that he's used Iran as a way to distract the issue. As long as he's talking about Iran, he doesn't have to talk about Palestine. But How much is that leverage over the Americans? In other words, in order to get Netanyahu not to attack Iran, the Americans have to compromise on Palestine. Is that in the works? Is that in the mix, do you think?
Listen, one might forget who is the superpower and who is the most depending country. It shouldn't be like this. You must know, and I guess you do know, that Israel is depending on the United States like never before, military, politically, and even economically. And I don't see why an American president cannot put pressure on Israel to put an end to the occupation, something that I have no doubt in my heart that President Obama believes in. Why can't he put an end to it once and for all without connecting it to anything, just to connect it to the friendship between Israel and the United States and to the dependence between Israel and the United States?
Well, again, I'm speaking with Gideon Levy, who is an Israeli journalist and columnist for Haaretz and a member of the newspaper's editorial board. He is the former spokesperson for Shimon Peres, and Gideon Levy writes the weekly Twilight Zone feature, which covers the Israeli occupation in the West Bank and Gaza for over the last 25 years, and his latest book is The Punishment of Gaza. So, assuming that the president does not seize that moment, as you've suggested, and of course, it is unfortunately, it's not likely, but you're suggesting here that if there is, in your article that's gotten a lot of international attention, you're suggesting that the Israeli economy will not withstand a boycott and that the analogy would be what happened in South Africa, where eventually the economic boycott became effective because the business community approached the country's leadership and basically says that this has got to end. So you're suggesting here that perhaps the Israeli business community would do the same and prevail on the more ideological politicians?
Absolutely. And not only the economical community, it can be also the army. It might also be the politicians by themselves. Look, Prime Minister Netanyahu is already well aware to the danger of international boycott. And this already brought him now to the negotiation table. I think this is one of his main concerns that brought him to this negotiation table, the fact that he understands that things are going to change and Europe might boycott more and more. So I can tell you more than this. The Minister of Justice, Tzipi Livni, the chief Israeli negotiator, she said it very clearly. She said last week, before the European step, that the European attitude is going to change very drastically. It will not include only boycott of settlement products, but it will include any Israeli product if Israel will not get back to the negotiation table.
Well, but they are back at the negotiating table. And are you suggesting that this is not necessarily sincere on Netanyahu's part? Is he dodging a bullet, or does he really seriously want to talk with the Palestinians?
It's a very good question that I'm not sure that anyone can give the answer. Until now, if to judge Netanyahu until now, he does not believe in peace with the Palestinians, he does not believe in the need of peace with Palestinians, and he has no intention to get to a real just settlement. His only purpose until now was to keep the strategic relations with the United States and to do anything possible in order not to lose sympathy in Washington. Did he change? Is he different in his third term? Let me doubt it very much, but we will have to give him to one more chance because there is no alternative. I'm very, 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 very skeptical. But what do we have to lose? Let's see.
Well, when you said, Gideon Levy, a little while ago that you wish the President of the United States would be more assertive and he has the power and the ability and he could make Israel be more serious, and many people have criticized U.S.-Israeli relations as they've been described as a form of assisted suicide in terms of the West Bank festering forever And I guess a lot of the military people, they were the first, in fact, the military people, from my understanding, going back to people like Yehoshaphat Hakabi and others who brought about the idea of a two-state solution for security reasons primarily. But do you think that it would be helpful if the president of the United States isolated the people who you say in your article calling for a boycott, the Israeli Patriots' Final Refuge boycott, that you're saying that it's not the settlers who are the primary culprits, but rather those who cultivate their existence? And I assume you're referring to the Sheldon Adelsons and the Moskowitzes out here in California who have the Bicycle Club Casino and the family that owns Häagen-Dazs ice cream and others who send tons of money from the United States to Israel to build settlements on the West Bank. So do you think it would be useful in any way for the president to enter that debate and talk about the mechanics of how it's American conservative supporters of the Israeli right who are creating the facts on the ground?
No, this was not my intention, and I'm not sure the American president can prevent Sheldon Adelson, a private American citizen, from donating to any kind of purpose overseas. My main concern is that the settlement project is not a private project. It is a project of the State of Israel, and any Israeli is involved in this project. And I have very little complaints about the settlers. I have so many complaints about those who enable them to be there, to steal the land, and to do what they are doing. So those must be punished or persuaded, those who carry the responsibility, namely the Israeli government and basically any Israeli citizen.
So I take it from your article that the problems go beyond politics. They're to do with, in many ways, with the attitudes of the Israeli people. You're suggesting in your article, as long as the arrogance and self-victimization continues amongst the chosen people, the most chosen in the world, always the only victim, the world's explicit stance won't change a thing. So I take it there are two problems that you have, that you feel the Israelis are too brainwashed with nationalism to come to their senses, and I guess to another extent, they're too comfortable living comfortable lives, which they just can't relate to what's happening quite near to them across the other side of the wall. So those are the two main factors that you're arguing. Am I correct?
Absolutely. I couldn't phrase it better.
And what kind of response have you gotten at home? It must make a lot of people uncomfortable.
You can imagine yourself, yes, but I'm quite used. Yeah, there are even two right-wing NGOs who want to sue me for this article because there is a new law in Israel which does not allow to call for boycott. I mean, this is already illegal according to the new law, just calling for boycotting Israel. So it might get to court, this article.
So, but presumably you're not a masochist, Gideon Levy. You're not out there to be punished. You're out there to try and change attitudes and change the politics. What about the Israeli left? Are they getting behind what you're sticking your neck out for?
Sure, there are certain circles, unfortunately very limited ones, who support such articles and encourage me to continue, but let's not be mistaken. We are dealing with a small minority.
And that you don't think there's any way you can change? Is that to do with the changing demographics, the emigration from Russia? What happened to the Israeli left? I know we don't want to spend the next hour talking about that, but can you give us a brief description or reason why it is that the Israeli left is small and insignificant?
First of all, it was never really left and never really strong. It shrank. This is true after the Second Intifada, after the terror attacks, But it shows how little solid it was from the first place. And it has to do with many factors, but I think the biggest one is the systematic brainwash in Israel by the media, by the education system, which creates this attitude, very nationalistic and very blind morally.
Well, is there any note of optimism you can leave us on? I mean, every time we discuss Israel, it's usually bad news, and the headlines now are telling us that maybe there's some good news, or there's some reason to think that there may be some good news. I'm not wishing you to be Pollyanna here, but is there anything you can leave us with that is not bleak?
It's very hard for me, but let's give it a chance.
Okay. Well, Gideon Levy, I thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Again, I've been speaking with Gideon Levy, who is an Israeli journalist and columnist for Haaretz and a member of the newspaper's editorial board. He's the former spokesperson for Shimon Peres. Gideon Levy writes the weekly Twilight Zone feature in Haaretz, which covers the Israeli occupation of the West Bank and Gaza for over the last 25 years. And his latest book is The Punishment of Gaza. And this has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Time.